returning to the land to farm and connect with the earth. Across Maine, more and more people are becoming farmers, tending crops and running a farm for the first time. For some, it's the realization of a dream. Farming is hard work and can be very expensive, but those who succeed find great satisfaction working the land and giving back to the community. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program, we'll explore some of the challenges of running a farm as a business. Joining us in the studio, Cara Fitzgerald, assistant professor with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. She teaches a course in first-time farming. Andrew Marshall, Education Programs Director at the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, where he runs farmer training programs. And John Piotti, Executive Director of the Maine Farmland Trust, which works to make farmland more accessible. Down on the farm, this is Maine Calling. And join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to my guests. Cara, we'll start with you. We hear a lot about the demise of the family farm, and yet there's a new crop, if you'll pardon that, of farmers coming in for various reasons. Who are they, and why are they doing it?
Well, we see a number of different types of new farmers coming in. Some of them are young people, some recently out of college who are looking to start their professional life as farmers. And another large group that we see are retirees or folks who are finishing up part their established professional life, and they're looking to do something where they can be their own boss and work outside and do something that they find personally fulfilling.
And we've seen in the past, you know, the back to the land movement of the 1960s, and there was sort of it was romanticized a little bit. Is this a more practical bunch, or are a lot of the same reasons for doing so?
I'd say there are a lot of the same reasons, but I think a lot of the people who are getting into farming are looking at it as a potential business, and so they are keeping an eye on income and their expenses, and they're trying to make sure that it's something that works in the big picture for them financially.
Andrew Marshall of Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners, you see the same group coming to you for advice?
Yeah, absolutely. We tend to see a lot of the younger folks that Cara mentioned, and so they're young, they're idealistic, they're pretty well educated, they oftentimes have not grown up on a farm or even in a rural background. So this is really their first time in this environment. And so we run a couple different phases of training for them. We have an apprenticeship program, which is really for that first time farmer. First time person wanting to learn. And that tends to be kind of an immersive season or year long experience on a farm where, you know, oftentimes that they'll either catch the bug and understand that farming is really what they want to do. That's actually kind of in the minority of circumstances. And if not, they'll realize that they don't want to farm, but oftentimes it'll be kind of a sort of a life-changing, informing experience for them, and they'll be, you know, informed consumers and eaters over the rest of their lives.
So it's a bit of a reality check. And what
Very
you're saying
so.
Is many of them kind of realize, wow, I'm not sure I'm up for this.
Yeah, I think we're lucky if about 20% of the folks who work on farms in our apprenticeship program really go on and commit to that lifestyle, because it really is, you know, you mentioned the word romanticization, and I think there's an element of that to farming for certainly. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks, just their expectations aren't necessarily up to it.
So. What is it that they come to realize? Just that you have to get up too early and lift too much heavy stuff, and it's
yes. And it's extremely hard work. It's isolating. It's sort of by nature you're stuck in one place. It's very rooted in the land, which is a good thing, but it's also, you know, it tends to be somewhat socially isolating. And you don't make a heck of a lot of money, especially in the beginning, especially when you're learning, you're sort of paying your dues. And the apprenticeship model is one that isn't necessarily financially remunerating.
Yeah. So. John Piotti of the Maine Farmland Trust, we've heard lots of stories in recent years about the demise of the family farm, and more specifically about the fears about the loss of large tracts of farmland mm-hmm. under economic duress. If next generations don't want to farm, but they can make a lot of money by divvying up the homestead and putting condos on it. Is that still a battle we're fighting?
It is a battle that we're fighting, and in fact, in some ways, it's getting worse. The economics of farming and the people interested in farming, that number is growing, as you just heard. But at the same time, a great amount of our farmland is owned by very old people. So the challenge has become, in some ways, a demographic challenge. We just have so much land that will be in transition in the next few years that we're going to have a glut of available land. Fortunately, those people that we've been talking about here, there are a great number of folks who are interested in farming. And usually, if they get through the training at MOFCA or through a cooperative extension, they're still interested, there's still a big barrier. And the principal barrier is access to affordable land. And so that's a big part of what we try to do.
And we'll talk about how you do that. But I want to get a visual image of kind of what's going on here. So you have younger non-farming people interested in getting in for their own reasons. And maybe they're, I'm going to overly generalize, but maybe they're interested in getting a farm in Hope or Appleton mm-hmm. near Camden where they can still have a life. Mm-hmm. But there are large tracts of lands up in the middle of Maine where maybe even dedicated farmers are not going to want to be so isolated. Is that an issue?
It is an issue. So much of the farming that has been successful financially in the last 20 years in Maine has been what we sometimes refer to as local agriculture. It's gone by different names over the last 20 years, but it's principally now that are farms that are selling most, if not all, of their product locally, either directly through a farm stand or a CSA or close to direct by selling to a local store or a local institution. And those farms generally need to be close to markets. So it's a little bit of a paradox because the land that is most expensive is also, because of development pressure, is also often located in places where you can be most successful as a farmer. Having said that, Maine has a need and opportunity of farming at all scales. It's not just these smaller direct market farms. We're seeing a growth in agriculture on some of our larger farms that are serving broader commodity markets. And it's truly a situation where one form of agriculture feeds the other. These small farms or these farms selling locally, their success depends to some extent on the fact that we have continued to have farm infrastructure. If you're raising goats and making goat cheese, the economics of that work in part because Maine still has enough dairy farms as a critical mass that allows for bulk shipments of grain into the state. And it works in the other direction, too. These larger farmers, they're both learning from seeing some of these direct marketing skills and sometimes they're picking up on some of the things that these local farms are doing. And the general feeling that farming has a future and that farmers contribute to the local economy helps farms of all type. So it's hard to generalize. You can't generalize. We have 8,500 farms in the state. We have 8,500 very different stories. But I'm optimistic that the future of Maine will have a variety of farms operating in different ways and different scales, and that diversity makes us strong.
Andrew, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow on with John's point about this sort of asymmetry of or the disconnect between the high cost of land around really good markets and, you know, the difficulty to access that land. And that scenario is certainly exacerbated for beginning farmers for a couple reasons. One is that those types of markets are really the most accessible for beginning farmers. So those direct-to-consumer markets where people can build relationships with their customers. They can start small with higher value products, capture all of the value from those products by selling them directly to the consumers. And so that's where we're seeing, you know, the large majority of beginning farmers starting out in those sorts of marketing situations. They can then graduate as they scale up, as they gain markets, and as they gain skills and experience with what they're growing, they can then graduate to markets that are potentially, you know, less, more wholesale and such things like that. So it's exacerbated for that reason.
But so without generalizing too much, though, so we're seeing as you mentioned, older family farmers who the younger generations don't want to get in, and maybe they're a dairy farm or they're growing broccoli, you know. And they're getting out. They're not being replaced by these young, you know, like people don't quit their job as a stockbroker, move to Maine and grow 200 acres of broccoli, right?
Well, maybe in that example, you're right. We do see young people who wish to get into dairy. And dairy is an unusual situation because the price of milk is controlled by the federal government. And Maine is actually a great place to raise livestock and produce milk. But the prices the farmers get don't reflect that. It's not because this is a poor place to produce milk. It's because of federal policies that our dairy farmers are often struggling. But nonetheless, there's a great allure for dairy. And we do see young people entering and wishing to get into dairy. But as Andrew was mentioning, many of the young farmers, they start with a mixed vegetable operation. It's something you can do on relatively few acres, make a decent return on that. It's well-suited to direct marketing. And livestock sometimes comes secondary. It comes over time.
And I'm sorry, the dairy that we are seeing younger folks getting into tends to be a different kind of dairy, happening on a different scale than is sort of the legacy or the tradition in Maine. So
what sorts of product? You mean cheese?
Yeah, adding value, you know, bottling milk, selling direct to consumer, and not sort of just putting it right into the commodity train or on the milk truck.
And as it happens, there's a real market for that. I mean, the sort of locally done, well done, value added products are in high demand, and they seem to catch a good price.
You're absolutely right, and that's been a big part of the growth of agriculture in Maine in the last 15, 20 years. People either adding value, or perhaps diversifying their operations and selling direct. And to get back to your earlier question, are we seeing these maybe 200-acre or 300-acre farms in central Maine? In central Maine, they're often dairy farms. As those might go out of business, do we see young farmers coming in to try to purchase that? And that's land that sometimes could be a little bit more affordable. And again, it's hard to not overgeneralize because every situation is the same. First off, there are young people from farm families who want to stay in farming. I don't want to give you the impression that there aren't. There are many. They also have to have the economics work. And as I mentioned before with dairy, that's just tough because of federal policies.
And if they're coming back from college with debt to start out with, it's not a great place to be.
Makes it that much worse. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing as some of those dairy farms transfer, we're seeing some of those farms go into the next generation of more traditional dairy families. We're seeing some of those farms go to new farmers, often young farmers, but not always, who want to try their hands in it. And then we're seeing increasingly on some of those farms that are close enough to market centers, we're seeing maybe a 300-acre dairy farm become two or three farms of 100 acres that maybe is better suited to vegetables or smaller livestock.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Let's talk about some of the challenges. We mentioned access to land, and we can talk more about what the state is doing to help that and what your organization is doing. But what are some of the other challenges that we face here in Maine? I mean, I think about weather, number one. You know, it's, you know, a week ago, I have four chickens. That's the extent of which I can commit to this. You know, their water's frozen. And then this, you know, now my grass is so high, I it's hard to mow. It's just a very strange place to keep ahead of, isn't it?
It is. And regardless of where anyone is farming, the weather is going to be a challenge. But overall, the knowledge about production is a challenge for a lot of growers and new growers. So with Cooperative Extension, one of the things that we provide is ongoing education for new and established producers, and that's a great help to them. And actually, that's one of the barriers of somebody new coming into a large-scale farm is the scope of production is just so large, it's so hard to learn all of the intricacies of production and marketing and equipment and labor management. But all of those pieces can be challenges. Finding markets, that balance between the location of your land and where your market is, how to have a good market presence, how to price your products, that profitability is a real challenge as well.
It sounds daunting, but I'm sure it's a lot of fun. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we want to hear from you, your comments and questions, share your thoughts. Again, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, we mark the one-year anniversary of the capture and death of Osama bin Laden. Journalist Peter Bergen produced the first TV interview with bin Laden back in 1997 and has written about him ever since. Bergen's new book is called Manhunt, the 10-year search for bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point Blind, Chinese activist Chen Guangcheng makes a daring escape. We'll examine his fate and impact on U.S.-China relations. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point this evening at midnight. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by WBRC Architects Engineers, committed to providing outstanding solutions and value, with offices in Bangor, Portland, and Sarasota, Florida, and online at WBRCAE.com, and by Southport Marine on Casco Bay, now offering maritime skiffs, slips available with rigging specialist and yacht broker on site, southportmarine.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about returning to the land to become a farmer. And with me in the studio, Cara Fitzgerald, assistant extension professor, at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, John Piotti, executive director of the Maine Farmland Trust, and Andrew Marshall, educational program director at Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. During the break, I was just talking about how daunting it must be for someone who has never even been on a farm or grew up on a farm to get in to try to start a farming business and make it work. Cara, how does that go?
Really, one of the best things to do is to try to get some practical experience farming. So like with MOFCA's apprenticeship and journeyperson programs, that's a great way. For people who are working full-time, they often can't dedicate that amount of time, but they can work as a paid employee on a farm or even volunteer for free in exchange for learning some skills. And some people just start, whether it's gardening on a larger scale or have a few livestock of their own to keep track of and just get a sense of what the skills are that they need, what the schedule is like. That's something that's hard for a lot of people who are leaving other professions, is understanding that farming, especially at certain times of year, can be absolutely unrelenting. And if you don't do the work, then your income and your business can just evaporate for the year. So that practical experience is really essential.
On the other side, though, people who are new to the game who might have experience in technology or in business, don't they bring another skill set to the farming business that maybe even may help sort of move it forward and help them work around what they don't know and actually give them an edge over sort of the old dog farmer who doesn't want to change his ways or try new things?
I think you raise a great point. Yeah. Farmers that are successful today have to be very versatile in their skills. They have to be good at production of crops, of animals, if they're also involved with livestock. But well beyond that, they have to be accountants. They have to understand the whole marketing side. As we were saying earlier, so many of these farms rely on direct marketing. that's something if you have a commodity farm where you're selling to a wholesaler or a producer, your farm has basically gotten out of that business. It's a whole new thing. So a lot of young people or older people who are getting into farming bring with them skills that are highly, highly useful for the kind of farming that we're doing well. So they may be lacking in some areas, but they often have something else which is of real use.
1-800-399-356 to join the conversation. Let's go to Buxton and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So there's a myriad of different topics I wish I could talk to you guys all day about. But I'm really glad that someone from Maine Farmland Trust and from Mofka are part of this conversation. I think such as well. But I am the farm manager at Little River Flower Farm in Buxton. I'm 26, and I just moved to Portland. And something that I've been noticing in Maine is that I don't see a conversation like I was seeing in Massachusetts when I was working with a farmer training program there of getting young farmers, getting farmers access to land without having to buy it, finding willing landowners who have good agricultural land who aren't using it, either because of age or because it's just more burden than they can take on, and making those connections between those farmers who want land who can't buy it and those who have land and can't farm it.
That's a great question. Maine Farmland Trust does a variety of things that support beginning farmers and farmers of all types. But one of the programs we run is something called Farm Link. And through Farm Link, we match people who are looking for land with people who are interested in selling or leasing it. And the dynamics of Farm Link have changed markedly in just the last few years. A couple of years ago, we only really had people looking to purchase land. Farmers were not generally interested in leasing opportunities. And we're beginning to see that change. And FarmLink is responding to that, perhaps not as fast as it could. We're about to launch a new website, and part of that will be putting potential leasing opportunities front and center in front of farmers. I think people are increasingly realizing that it's not so important to necessarily own the land as long as they have a well-crafted lease that's going to give them long-term access to that property, the ability and the confidence to invest in amending the soil, and invest in infrastructure, and know that that investment's not going to be lost. And unlike in Massachusetts and other places where land values have been so high for so long, we're a little bit behind in these areas, but it's a place that's growing and growing strong.
So who would benefit from, you mentioned the reasons for leasing versus mm-hmm. buying, but is it if you don't have enough cash or you just don't want to make the investment to take on all of the ownership of that property and the silos? And
I've seen it principally in two areas. One, just where, and it's often a beginning farmer, where a beginning farmer doesn't have any money and can't really afford to buy property. But I'm also seeing it in farmers with some resources, but they want to invest those resources in the business rather than tying it all up in the land. And you know, you look at a lot of other businesses, many businesses, you do not own the plant. You do not own necessarily the equipment, but you own the means of production and the intellectual capacity to do the work. And I'm not saying that's the direction that farming is going to go. I think farming is grounded in the land. I think land ownership is very important for us to have successful farms. But we need a myriad of opportunities and strategies to allow people to get into this business in a way that works for them.
Jeff, go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry, I just wanted to follow up on that as well. And Jeff, you're certainly not alone. The participants in our programs, we have a journey person program, which is sort of an advanced training. And the last time I checked, about two-thirds of those folks did not have secure long-term land tenure. And the primary reason is affordability. These folks they're young. They've dedicated most of their adult working lives to learning how to farm and doing it right. And that has not put them in a position to afford land. And so we recognize that and we're concerned about it. And there are some really neat, robust alternative models of land tenure that I think are gaining ascendancy in Maine, around the Northeast in general. And I think that there's a bit of a changing of the tide in terms of sort of a philosophical approach to that. You know, ownership is not as important as it once was or as it has been traditionally, and people are opening themselves up to other alternative models of land tenure that I think we need to figure out how to make those robust and work for all everyone involved. So that's what we got to do.
Jeff, where are you at? Are you interested in farming?
Yes. So I'm a farm manager, and this is the second time I've been running the day-to-day operations of someone else's farm.
I see.
And eventually I think I'd like to become a farmer, but I may also want to go into agricultural education. But in any case, what I see is land access issues happening.
Sure. All right, great. Thanks for the call. Let's go to South China and Linda. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Yes, Linda. Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah. I'm calling more as a customer to the small farmers and acknowledging the fact that there's just a lot of great marketing that's going on, and between going to the farmers markets and the CSAs are a wonderful piece. I'm also a member and a volunteer at MOFCA. And another piece that's I'd like to add to the conversation is I've also, just a year now, I'm a coordinator for a food club here in South China, of which the Crown of Maine Organic Cooperative in Vassalboro brings products from farms to us, and they are doing an excellent job in giving us the bios of the farmers. It's really just puts us more and more in touch and more of the broader scope of the diversifying is very apparent that the farms are, because we see the name of the farm next to every product on our ordering list. And these are the Cook sisters who grew up in the county on a farm and so on, and this was, I believe, the dream of their father. And so they now deliver throughout the state. But the piece that's most impressive to me and gives me the connection at a little bit of a distance is their bios on the farmers, and keeping us, the customers, in touch with that has been another service to building an awareness and a connection from the consumer to the farmer.
All right. Linda, thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Any comments? Yeah. I can see heads nodding. You all agree. 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Bangor and Jane. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the program.
Hi. This is a great program. I'm sorry I tuned in late. Linda in South China, Google Cooperative Maine. I'm a member of Cooperative Maine. It's a volunteer organization, and I'd love to hear what you folks have to say about. I know that MOFCA hosted a conference in January on how the cooperative business model could help farmers, existing ones, prospective ones, farmers who are struggling to hang on to the farm, farmers who want to retire and don't know what to do, want to keep their farm, you know, in working condition. And like to, you know, hear what you have to say of that. I also just want to comment. I just found out today, I didn't know that 30% of the dairy farmers in Maine are member owners of Cabot Creamery Co-op. And Cabot, you may know about this, is sponsoring an East Coast community tour that starts on May 12th and winds up on July 7th in Portland. It starts in Florida, winds up on Portland, Maine on July 7th, which just happens to be International Day of Cooperatives, the United Nations International Day of Co-ops. And they're going to be at Payson Park all day. And so, you know, producer co-ops, ag co-ops, food co-ops, local Sprouts worker co-op is going to be serving food, the wonderful restaurant in Portland. You know, a great day to celebrate cooperatives and the, you know, the role they can play in our whole food system in Maine. And so I'd really love to hear what you folks have to say about that.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Jane. Just explain for the uninitiated what co-ops are and how they work. Andrew?
Well, geez. I think that might be above my pay grade. It's essentially, you know, co-ops take a number of different forms, but the most common in sort of agriculture is a in an institution, a financial institution that is owned by the farmers. So each farmer has a stake in it, and it's a democratically run institution that each farmer then benefits from on the other end. And basically, the mechanism there is to pool agricultural products from very diffuse, you know, individual producers, be able to provide higher volumes for larger markets, and still be able to have a say in the price that one is able to get from that. And so the cooperative model has a long and proud history in among farmers, and it's really neat to see its resurgence in Maine in particular and around the country, because one of the challenges that farmers have is being able to produce in a high enough volume to serve large customers, large scale customers, and still get enough revenue to be able to make the price as opposed to take a price.
Right? So it's kind of like having one big farm only operated at various farms around.
When it works, yes.
Right. It works right. That is key. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN Radio or on MPBN Television, please visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information. Or you can call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by the University of Southern Maine, the convenience of online programs, the quality of USM faculty. usm.maine.edu/finishyourdegree. Join us at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for It's Your World, the Earth's Rising Food and Water Needs. The guest is Gawain Kripke, Director of Policy and Research at Oxfam America, and Peter Lockery, Director of the Water Team at CARE. That's It's Your World, immediately following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, first-time farmers. With me in the studio, Cara Fitzgerald, Assistant Professor of the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, John Piotti, Executive Director at Maine Farmland Trust, and Andrew Marshall, Educational Programs Director, Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Jennifer writes on Facebook, she would like to hear more about CSAs. Can somebody explain what that is and how it works?
So a CSA model, there are a variety of ways that it manifests itself, but sort of at its purest, a group of consumers hire a farmer to grow for them, and they take the benefits of whatever has been produced that year, but also if it's a poor year for a certain crop or overall, then they have to accept those losses. In reality, most CSAs that we see now aren't quite that pure, so there's a where the farmers hired by the consumers, but consumers buy a kind of a stake in the farm's harvest. Some farms run it as they get a share of whatever it is grown. For some, it's a set value at a discount. Some even take the model to the point where the consumer puts money up front and they get a discount off purchases at a farm stand or at a farmer's market. From the farmer's perspective, one of the advantages is that they get money up front before the season really begins, and that gives them operating capital for the season. From the consumer's perspective, it gives them a great connection to the farm. Many CSAs, especially in Maine, do a lot of things to try to connect their customers to the farm itself and inform them about the crops and what's coming and recipes. And so it's a great win-win for both the producer and for the consumer.
So and because otherwise, I mean, in some ways, a farmer gets paid once a year. If they're, you know, they get paid when their crop comes out and they sell it.
Right.
And that's the money they have, and then they have to plant. And is financing difficult in that way?
It is. I mean, there are issues of financing large expenses like a tractor, but then there's the year-to-year cash flow issues, really month-to-month. And that it can be a big pinch for producers if they are not eligible to get a production loan or if they choose not to get a production loan because they put a lot of money into the crop and it can be sometimes many months until they get that income back from it.
If I could just add on CSAs, you're absolutely right that one of the major benefits are money up front, so you might not have the same cash flow problems mm-hmm. as a farmer. But the other advantage is, in some ways, you've pre-sold what you're growing. And so the farmer doesn't have to put in the same amount of effort and time into marketing. And that's huge. The amount of time that farmers put into marketing their product with these direct marketing vehicles can be extensive. And that is his time, and it ultimately costs the consumer money. The product that's being sold at the farmer's market is going to be higher for that reason. So it really is, as Kara says, a win-win. The farmer not only gets money up front, but is pre-selling product, and the consumer is going to get high-quality product at a lower price than that product is probably available from other market vehicles.
Does the farmer also know how much to grow so that there's less waste at the end of the growing season?
Absolutely. It helps, but as we were saying before, the vagaries of weather and conditions and what's happening in a year, they're still going to be all over, but it helps.
Let's go to Will in Dover Foxcroft. Hi, Will.
Hi. I was just calling to raise the question of property taxes and how those can affect small-scale farms and essentially drive farmers off of land in areas where there's more development. And I'll hang up and await an answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
I'd love to tackle that one. That's a big part of what we focus on at Maine Farmland Trust. Property taxes are a major cost for farmland owners. A lot of land, 1.3 million acres in Maine, is in agricultural production. A lot of that is land that's highly suitable for development. And the way the state constitution is written, that land is assessed at its market value, which is often much higher than the farm value, its current use value, if you will. So farmers are often paying pretty considerable property taxes, and that's in a business where you may not have high income. Now, there are some solutions to this. One is Maine has a wonderful program called current use taxation. Manifests itself in different ways. Many people are familiar with the tree growth program. There's a companion program for farmland that would get the landowner's taxes down to current use levels. That helps.
I assume you have to prove that you're doing enough farming to justify
that
status.
You do indeed. It's an application process. It goes ultimately to the state. You have to meet certain thresholds. But it's a program that works. Now, this is not a giveaway to the farmer because every study that's been done anywhere in this country shows that farmers pay, even when they pay taxes at current use levels, they actually pay more than the services that they receive. Mm-hmm. Cows don't go to school. It's those houses that are really driving up municipal costs, not farmland. So even at current use prices, farms are more than covering their share, which suggests maybe you should go beyond that. And there's now a program that the state has. It's called the Voluntary Municipal Farm Support Program that allows communities that really want to do a lot to support farming in their area to lower property taxes on farms even lower. One last thing I just want to add. It's not just the current taxes that are sometimes a problem. It's also that tax valuations can drive farmers out of business. The classic example is that beautiful open field on the edge of town, and the local community decides that's a great place to extend the sewer line or something like that, and they make that decision without really thinking about its impacts on that farmer. That land is still being used the same way. But by virtue of it now being adjacent to that sewer, it might be, if somebody did want to sell it for development, and of course the farmer doesn't, but it might be worth now two or three times more. and that is a direct extra cost in taxes to the farmer.
All right, we've got about 3 minutes left. I want to take a few more calls. Let's go to North Blue Hill and Carol. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I just want to thank you for the program and just mention that Paul Birdsall, who is a founder of MOFCA, or one of the beginners, has been buying land, at least this is my understanding, in North Blue Hill, putting a conservation easement on it, and then selling it at a more reasonable price to small farmers. And there are a lot of young families here on in Blue Hill, in the whole peninsula, who are making a go of it with their kids, and it's wonderful to see. But I think it would really be important to bring up, besides the difficulty of getting land, problems for very small farmers. And I would draw your attention, it should be mentioned, Dan Brown on the Blue Hill Peninsula, who's being sued for his selling raw milk from his one cow. He and his wife have a farm, and they have it to their neighbors. And they've been doing it for over 5 years. They do it from their home. They don't advertise. They followed all the regulations, but now the regulations, they haven't changed. They're just being reinterpreted so that it hurts small farmers. But anyway, I think that should be mentioned.
All right. Thank you, Carol. We're running out of time here. Quick comment on that?
First, I want to respond to what you said about Paul Birdsall. Paul Birdsall was one of my heroes. He was a founding member of Maine Farmland Trust. He serves on our board to this day. And what you described is an accurate description of the work that he's done in the Blue Hill Peninsula. We stole the model from him, and we now have a statewide program that we call Buy Protect Sell. Great program, horrible name, where we do exactly that. We purchase farms. We place an easement on them to lower the value and ensure that they can be purchased at farmland value and make them available to farmers, both young farmers and a lot of existing farmers who are thinking of expanding or securing land that they had been leasing that they have now lost. So it's a great model, and Paul has been just a wonderful champion of agriculture in Maine in so many ways.
On the raw milk issue that she mentioned, is there confusion or in terms of regulation, or what's at the core of this issue?
Well, you'd ask 10 people, I think you get 10 different answers on that one. It's certainly, I guess the two issues are, barriers to entry for beginning farmers, and regulations are certainly can sometimes, in actuality or in perception, be fairly high barriers. And then on the other side is food safety and really making sure that we all have safe food to consume. So those are really the two main issues, but getting back to Paul and the Blue Hill Peninsula in general, that is a place with a really rich small farming scene. And one of the main reasons for that is farmers like Paul and Dennis King and others who participated in the MOFCA apprenticeship program and spawned a number of really amazing next generation farmers in that place.
So, 30 seconds left. You want to give your websites?
Sure. It's www.mainefarmlandtrust.org.
Extension@maine.edu.
MOFCA.org.
Kara, John, Andrew, thanks so much for being here today. Kara Fitzgerald, Assistant Professor at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, John Piotti, Executive Director of Maine Farmland Trust, and Andrew Marshall, Educational Programs Director, Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.